You are listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church, located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to westhill.net/donate.
Good morning. That was beautiful. Thank you so much, Scott, for all that you give to us all the time. It's just beautiful. Welcome to West Hill on this Christmas Sunday morning. Before we get into the service, we always like to acknowledge that we are on the traditional territory of the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nations lands, which lands were previously occupied by Seneca and Huron-Wendat First Nations. Each week, in order to remain aware of our treaty obligations and the relationship that we have with our First Nations brothers and sisters, we read one of the 94 recommendations sent to all levels of the government by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. And we expect to complete these readings in June 2017. Recommendation number 16 is, we call upon post-secondary institutions to create university and college degree and diploma programs in Aboriginal languages. And now I'll turn it over to Scott for a centering.
Grounded, Guided, Growing, A Time for Centering, from Scott Kearns.
My Christmas is going to be very different than it has in many years ago, and even last year, and maybe some of yours is too. And that's not necessarily bad, it's different, as Deb was saying. But I keep on applying that sense of grounded, what grounds us. And what that word means is that centering, whatever word you use, it doesn't have to be that word, but whatever centers you, gives you that steady, this I know. And that knowledge base, that no matter what anyone says, this I know, is that I'm a part of this big, fantastic, wonderful, beautiful, scary, risky thing called life. That's true, no matter what. That's true. And to be grounded in that, that reality of that, means that it changes, even when we don't like it to. And some of you may be having Christmases with less of what you had that was meaningful, or maybe some scary thought is coming closer, or maybe we just can't make it the way it should be, and Hallmark tells us how it should be, and Hallmark just makes cards. It doesn't mean anything beyond that. But that next idea of the guided by love in that life, and I just, you know, for me, I just want to encourage myself and all of us to get everything you can out of this season that says love to you. Get it, enjoy it, even if it's all you by yourself and you're enjoying the lights or some music. Let that go in you and say love to you. And if you hear of people loving people that don't have anything, or if you want to do that, get it. And also on the other side, give it. Whatever love you can share at this season, may it be a two-way flow that you're guided in receiving and guided in giving. And if you don't know how to do that, let's ask each other and share. I just learned a couple of things this week I never knew before, and then it was enlightening for me for that. So I'm just going to play those centering sort of music, and lead into our sharing time. You know, like the definition of empathy is not how would I feel if I were in this situation, but how is that person feeling in their situation? So it's getting into someone else's reality. I just want to tell you the embarrassing thing that happens when you don't. My mother is very crippled with arthritis, can hardly move and can't get out. And she has always celebrate Christmas Eve with her. Then this Christmas Day is with my sister and her family. Boxing Day has always been the larger mom's relatives. And mom Jen has decided not to take Bum to her house for that. I totally understand why. So I thought, I will try to make Christmas happen for my mother. And so I said, either that day or the next, Greta and I will come over, we'll have Christmas again, and we'll watch a Christmas movie together. And I thought, I am bringing to my mother the traditional Scrooge and all that. Would perfect. She paused. She said, or the lady's number one detective agency. And I thought, what's that got to do with Christmas? That's got nothing to do with it. You want Christmas, and I'm bringing you Christmas how you wanted it, right? No, it had changed. So these expectations we have both ways, you know, so it's a good time to remember that giving should be geared to the giftee, not the giver, and both ways around. And if someone misses you by a country mile, try and make the look on your face be, you know, Christmassy again. But anyway, just that it's a time when expectations can either send you the wrong direction or let you down and everything. So may we all remember to show empathy to others in this season and find out what would be gift and what would be good. And it might even be you leaving them alone. Might be. I think of things that would work out for. And now I'll just pass the microphone back to Greta.
In this, his time of need. I love that. Stephen.
We have two readings this morning. The first is from an author, Brandon Sanderson, author of The Way of Kings, and he's a science fiction writer for young people. Those candle flames were like the lives of men, so fragile, so deadly. Left alone, they lit and warmed. Let run rampant, they would destroy the very things they were meant to illuminate. Embryonic bonfires, each bearing a seed of destruction so potent it could tumble cities and dash kings to their knees. Reading number two just needs a preface. Words are just combinations of letters, right? But we give those combinations of letters meaning. And in this reading, there is a certain four-letter word, which is also in the title of the book, so it's kind of hard to avoid that. And so normally we might just say it here, but it's Christmas Sunday morning. That's okay. Everything's good. Just a water bottle or something fell over. People were worried that somebody had fallen over. That's all. Her water bottle is this big. Welcome to West Hill. It's her first Sunday here. Anyway, so if I just say F, we're good. You can fill in the rest, right? Okay. Or not. This is sort of the intro to the author. John C. Parkin is the son of two Anglican clerics, but spent most of his life studying and practicing the principles of Eastern religions. He recognized during one challenging moment of his life that expressing himself with the words, "eff it," released much of his tension. He argues that his use of the phrase is not gratuitous, but teaches the user to let go of unachievable results and engage fully in the present. So, here's his reading. It goes something like this. I am one person among 6.5 billion people on Earth at the moment. That's one person among 6,500,000,000 people. That's a lot of Wembley stadiums full of people, and even more double-decker buses, apparently the standard British measurements for size. And we live on an Earth that is spinning at 67,000 miles an hour. Through space, around a sun that is the center of our solar system, and our solar system is spinning around the center of the Milky Way at 530,000 miles per hour. It makes me dizzy just thinking about it. Just our solar system, which is a tiny speck within the entire universe, is very big indeed. If Earth were a peppercorn and Jupiter were a chestnut, the standard American measurements, you'd have to place them 100 meters apart to get a sense of the real distance between us. And this universe is only one of many. In fact, the chances are that there are many, many more populated Earths, just like ours, in other universes. And that's just space. Have a look at time, too. If you're in for a good run, you may spend 85 years on this Earth. Man has been around for 100,000 years, so you're going to spend just 0.00085% of man's history living on this Earth. And man's stay on the Earth has been very short in the context of the life of the Earth, which is 4.5 billion years old. If the Earth had been around for the equivalent of a day, with the Big Bang kicking it all off at midnight, humans didn't turn up until 11:59 and 58 seconds p.m. That means we've only been around for the last 2 seconds. A lifetime is gone in a flash. There are relatively few people on this Earth that were here 100 years ago, with some exceptions. Just as you'll be gone relatively soon. So, with just the briefest look at the spatial and temporal context of our lives, we are utterly insignificant. Merry Christmas. I can read this. As the perspective machine, lifts up so far above the woods that we forget what the word means, we see just one moving light. It is beautiful. A small, gently glowing light. It is a firefly lost somewhere in the cosmos. And a firefly on Earth lives for just one night. It glows beautifully, and then it goes out. And up there, so high in our perspective machine, we realize that our lives are really just like that of the firefly. Except the air is full of 6.5 billion fireflies. They're glowing beautifully for one night, and then they are gone. So, F it. You might as well really glow. John Z. Parkin, The Ultimate Spiritual Way. Offered as wisdom for the journey.
Conversation with a colleague who asked me what readings we were using this Sunday, and I had a Bill Maher one and one from Effet, The Ultimate Spiritual Way. He was a little alarmed, but anyway.
Focused Moments from Greta Vosper.
The focused moment, of course, brings the weight of those two readings together as I prepare for what it is that I'm going to share, my perspective, with you later on. So this comes to you from my vantage point, but I invite you, of course, to see it from your vantage point as well, because I'm generalizing here. Okay, the focus moment. From my every vantage point, the world spills out before me, beautiful and paltry together in an instant. I take it in, devour its sights, sounds, smells, and work some feat of transmutation upon them, intent on enveloping my little life in meaning. Painted thus, a neurological alchemy, the world I move through is of my own making. Is it even possible to wean ourselves away from what has been our greatest flaw, this sense of disconnectedness that keeps us from a greater view? Are we so hardwired, imprinted with the evolutionary stamp of preservation, that the worlds of others will remain ever lost to us, our chance encounters and grand collisions ever failing to envelop life itself in meaning? I cannot know. and have no claim nor art to make such grand illusions, set themselves in equal parts within what lays before us all. I cannot save us from the loneliness of singular perspectives and the withered truths they ever tell. But I can refuse to hold my vision as a fortress, refuse to lock it down, my sole perspective given its triumphant isolation. I can refuse to block out every image that might cast a shadow over something held, revered, my own. Bring me stories. Paint me pictures. Touch my hand, my mind, my heart. Draw your world upon my own. Bring its shadows, shed its light, press it in upon my privileged landscapes, and we will change the world forever. Keeping faith with this, our greatest truth, as long as we're together, we will never be alone. I want to talk today about two of the biggest symbols around this time of year, a baby and a star. We have built stories around those things. We see images of them. The cards that are shared at this time of the year are filled with those images, a baby in a creche or in a mother's arms, a star shining brightly down upon a stable or a family setting, or even upon a beautiful winter landscape. These two images that tie us to a story. And both of those images are symbols of stories that have gone before. They're symbols of prophecies that came into being. They can be found in the ancient texts that came previous to the Christian texts that wove them into our stories, and were picked up as those who were creating the emphasis on the Christian story as it was being built and told in a variety of different ways, in a variety of different settings. Those symbols became important to certain of those communities, and they wove them into their narratives, building on stories that had gone long before. Most scholars agree in liberal and critical contemporary scholarship that the stories were built by looking back on those ancient texts, back on the stories that had been written down hundreds of years before, that every time we find something in the Christian scriptures that says that it's the prophecy of something that happened in the Hebrew scriptures, that's because someone went back and found that story and brought it forward to put a particular emphasis on it, to make a certain group of people want to hear that story and give it a little bit more validity than it may otherwise have had. And so the star is woven into our story as bringing people from a distance to come and revere this new king. And the baby, of course, was probably King Ahaz's child about to be born at a time when the nation was threatened by other forces. And the story written down, the hope that was handed him was, before this kid can even tell the difference between right and wrong, those nations will no longer be in the land. They will not be threatening you. Everything will be fine. And so the story went back, the Christian story went back and picked that up and carried it forward. Prophecies, in that sense, were about reinforcing something that we think was good, reinforcing something that we want people to really understand. Sometimes we do it ourselves around fate. We look at something that's happened and we go back and we can see those moments that made it happen. The moment that Scott walked through that door, the moment that, your mother met your father, the moment that something caught your eye and later on it became a huge element in your life. Maybe your life's work was built upon a single moment. And we look back on that, trying to figure out how we got where we were. And we can identify all those things coming forward. Well, this happened, and this happened, and this happened. And some would call that fate. Fate rarely projects itself into the future, but when we go backwards, we can find these things and think, that's where this all started. Or that's who reminded me of that and made me turn in this direction. We weave our stories together with those tales from before, just as they did 2,000 years ago, trying to create a story that would hold people together and give them a common reason, a common cause for standing up and being strong against the forces that opposed them at the time. The star is another thing. And I love the reading that came to us about that. The reading about getting perspective, that perspective vortex that I speak about all the time, which was Douglas Adams's, which I think our author was looking at this time using the same thing. I've printed my sermon on top of a used piece of paper on the wrong side, so I really can't tell you at all what I'm going to say. I'll try to come up with it. But that this, the image of ourselves as a firefly living such a brief amount of time on a spinning planet in a universe amongst universes helps us get incredible perspective there and helps us understand that what we have to do in this life must be done with passion and with courage. We need to glow as brightly as we can. Why not? Why would we simply want to just, you know, do nothing? The idea of a nihilistic perspective on the world can breed indifference. It can make us think, well, what does it matter? Who cares? But it can also give us that reminder that we have to live as brightly and as beautifully as we can because of how briefly we live. So taking these two readings, the Sanderson reading, which is a beautiful image of how our lives can be compared to a candle flame, and I wanted to bring that story to bear on the idea of babies. Now, how many of you have raised perfect children? 2, 3, 4. We're getting a little braver here. That's very good. 5. Okay, 5. 5 of us have raised perfect children. I bet there were moments when you were a little worried, though. Perhaps, yes, undoubtedly moments that we were a little worried. I love that concept of this embryonic surge that Sanderson brings to us and talks about how there's this like incredible embryonic power that can burst into the world and actually bring kings to their knees and be incredibly destructive forces, or bring this beautiful strength and wonder and delight to the world. That in an infant's birth, all of that is there in that moment of wonder and the possibility that lies before that. But Sanderson reminds us that, you know, like, although everyone smiles and glows, Scott was telling me he was sitting in the mall waiting for me yesterday, and this little child in a stroller, his parents were not paying any attention, and the kid just stared at Scott for the longest time, long time. And then started giggling. Right. If you're just looking at a baby, you can get this incredible sense of beauty and warmth and light. And Sanderson recognizes that in his reading, that a candle left alone, you know, like just you can just look at it and it's beautiful. But let it get out of control in a mall at Christmas time, and a two-year-old can send any parent to distraction. Like a two-year-old acting out anywhere, whether it's in our living room or in the mall, can drive everyone kind of crazy. And a child left to its own devices, grown to an adolescence age or into a young adult or even a mature adult, without our having spent any time encouraging those proper traits that we think will lead to interactions with other people in a warm and welcoming and engaging, empathic way. If you don't teach your children that, they don't grow up with that. Peter and I were talking about the discrepancies between the gifts that his family gave him and the lack that my family offered me in those same areas just before the service started. Scott has, you know, taught me those things I needed to know. That my parents missed, but some of us, we grew up And we watched around us families that weren't able to share those gifts, that struggled for whatever reason, were compromised by their own histories, didn't offer an understanding of empathy or how to talk with others or how to get along with others. You know, those t-shirts that say play well with others. There's also t-shirts that say run with scissors. Runs with scissors. Scott doesn't like that one, but it's true. Some of us get along with people well because we've been taught how to do that, and some, you know, we're just a danger to ourselves and society because we weren't given those little bits of pieces and information that families may have given us, that may have shone on us in a school system that didn't put us down or didn't allow us to be bullied, that encouraged us in right relationship within the partnerships that we've created as we grew, that allowed us to grow in beauty and strength and goodness, and had reflected back to us those rough spots that sometimes made it difficult, encouraging us always to live out of the truth that was ourselves. So mixing those two readings together and coming up with this idea of how we have to monitor the candle flame. Not, you know, put a lid over it. It goes out if you put a lid over it. But monitor it and make sure it doesn't turn into a wildfire. If we do that with infants, as we're raising them to be responsible young adults, as we would like to believe we're capable of doing, if we do that and we do it well, we see ourselves sort of handing off this incredible generation. Put it now in the perspective from far away, in the perspective of fireflies, and invite us to think not just of the next generation, but the one after that, and the one after that, and the one after that. It's easy for us to find a book on the shelf at the bookstore or read stuff online about how to raise your children, what the best thing to do is, how not to spoil them, and how to, you know, allow their personality to develop and invite them to engage with all kinds of different things in their environment so that they become aware and they grow and their intellect develops, and we allow them to be who they are all the time, inviting them to do it in right relationship with people around them and with themselves. And it's easy to find those books. They're all over the place. Everybody has an idea about how to do that. Even beyond that, you can find books on relationship and books on, you know, parenting again. And all of us can find those books. But if we were actually looking at that, those lifetimes from the distance of that universal perspective, universes upon universes, and we were watching the fireflies in time come and go and come and go and come and go, where would we find the book that would say, let us raise humanity as a species? Let us assume humanity is an infant and that it must learn and grow and develop in the same way. That it must, we must find ways to develop the best of who we are, to stretch our intellect, to grow beyond the confines of the past, all the while developing our sense of right relationship with ourselves as a species and with all the species around us, with life on this planet as we know it, and the potential for life beyond this planet as we may come upon it. Do we allow humanity that freedom that sometimes we allow our children in those moments of extremely bad parenting, when we should be inviting them to see and understand relationship in a different way, honoring who they are, but inviting them to also engage with truth, with love, with compassion, with empathy? Do we have the courage to see ourselves as infants, that 2 seconds of the hour? Do we have the courage then to find ways to raise ourselves, to stop those behaviors that might damage us, that are a danger to our existence? Do we have the courage to invite ourselves to be in relationship in new ways? I don't think there are specific books on the bookshelf out there for us. There's some that talk about different concerns that we need to address, different ways that we need to provide for the future. Energy and water and the world's resources. A lot of planetary exploration is about finding us another home, perhaps. But I think that deep within us, we have to find the maturity that exceeds who we really are. The maturity to be our own parents, and usually that fails terribly, but to be our own parents and find a way to corral some of the enthusiasms that might be the death of us, and to encourage some of those traits that have in the past allowed us to thrive, to create those relationships that will create generations of flourishing on this planet. It's not just our moment. We're just a firefly among flies, among stars. We have so much that we must learn in order to mature into our being. And my hope is that even as we begin the telling of new stories, even as we build upon the stories of the past, even as we seek to live without story at all, that we can find in the combination of those things the truth of our present self here, then here and the now and the immediate, and how the future is so dependent upon that. May we find that flame sheltered and cared for. May we feel its warmth, and may we be challenged to see it into the future as we find our way toward parenting ourselves in a way that brings light, brings newness, and brings a sustainable future, not just for the fireflies that are here now, but for those who will come, for the planetary system itself, and for the universe beyond us. The stories that were told long, long ago, and the stories that are still told now, that are based on those prophecies from the past, or what we stories from the past that we identify as prophecy, they were to reinforce what was good. If we were to have our fortune told into the future, and it was good or bad, would we really want to hear what that is? We tend to lead into whatever we think the future is going to bring. If it's going to bring this, I'm going to steel myself for it. If it's going to bring that, I'm going to be ready. But we don't know, so we have to kind of guess. There used to be an Infiniti ad. Maybe some of you remember it. It was a beautiful car, and it said, it was a J something rather, and it said, start rationalizing. Do you remember that ad? I thought it was brilliant. You know, like you see this thing that you want, you know you really shouldn't have it. It's way too much money. It's not a really wise use of your resources. So if you just start rationalizing, it'll make perfect sense. Of course it will, because of all these reasons that you should have that. As we do in our, when we go to the behind us and we pick out all those moments explaining why this is right, why we ended up here, why this was good, so too we can do that into the future. Rationalize our way towards something that might not be the best for us, but feels comfortable and makes us feel good individually for a moment during our little firefly time on this earth. I don't think we can infinity ourselves quite that carelessly. I don't think we can just rationalize, well, you know, it's going to go this way and this is why. I think we have to dream. Last week I talked about hope, and I know after the service everybody's afraid to say, I hope you have a good Christmas, because I kind of decimated the word. But we have to also have those hopes that we can create something special, something powerful, and something new. And something that we, firefly lifetimes from here, we'll still be able to enjoy and develop and sustain. And it's beyond anything any of us can imagine now. And I say we can hope for that because we work diligently toward creating it, which means we don't just rationalize the stuff that we're doing now. We don't just you know, that's the way it's always been, or, but we need, I need to iron all my shirts, or whatever the thing is. We can't just rationalize our way toward a sustainable future. We rationalize our way out of the future that we currently have. The stories that we've had around Christmas have been stories about light and hope and promise and about everything good coming to us. And we've grown up. And we know that light and hope and promise doesn't just happen. That we're now grown up enough that we can make it happen for another generation. And it's important that we do that. So whatever stories are told around the fireplaces or the dinner table, whatever traditions are upheld and made bright this Christmas time, think not just of where it came from, but think about where it goes to. And pick out of it, as Deb was saying when she welcomed us today, pick out of it all that is good, that will sustain us, that we can take to the future with confidence that it's going to allow whatever must unfold in a way that leads toward life, not just for ourselves, but for all life on this planet and from wherever else it comes. And may those traditions be our roots. And may the stories that we tell from this day forward be our wings. And may we ever glow as much, as brightly, and as long as we possibly can. Thank you. Each week when I speak, the slide goes up and calls it a perspectives with a little bracket around the S, and I want to remind you what that's about. It's that I just share things the way I see them. The focus moment was about how I create the world through this neurological alchemy that takes place between what it is I see and touch and smell and how it is I translate that in my head. And each of you does exactly that same thing. Like each of you is walking around with a world constructed in your own brain of your own experiences and your own interpretations of those experiences. And we bump into one another all the time because our worlds are not the same. We've constructed them differently. So when I share my perspective, the little S in brackets behind it is you. Because you have to add your perspective to it. You have to add your world. You have to illuminate mine with your story. You have to draw over top of what my picture looks like in order to make sense of it. And then you have to take it and share it with someone else. But it won't just be mine then. It'll be something you've created in your neurological alchemy. And you'll share that with other people and you'll bump up against them. And they won't agree, and you'll have a conversation, and you'll go away, and both your worlds will be a little different, and that's when that S really works. That's the biggest piece about what happens here. And that Parkin story and the Sanderson reading, I mean, those two things, take them away. Let them tickle what you have inside your head. And add a little bit of what I added, and go into a world that's illuminated by stories this time of year in a way that no other time of the year is illuminated. And bring your own shining to it. Bring your own light, your own glow, whatever you want it to be. Bring yourself to that and make it beautiful. Make it whatever your heart can possibly make it, because only your heart can do that. And have a fabulous Christmas. Have a great time with family. Bear the conversations bravely and beautifully. Enjoy all of it that you can. And go in peace, making the world that way as you go. Amen.
You have been listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to www.westhill.net/donate.